Welcome to the Producer's Patio from Sterling Rock Productions in Chicago. I'm Corbett Lunsford, and today I'm here with, as always, Grace McPhillips, talented actress and producer.
Hi.
And today we're talking about the real work of filmmaking with the original movie guy. We think of ourselves as movie people, but this guy is the movie guy from The Movie Guys, Paul Preston. Hey, Paul.
Yay!
Hey, welcome to me. Thank you. Appreciate it.
If you look at Paul's IMDb page, it says, actor, editor, cinematographer, director, producer, writer, self. Paul Preston.
I have appeared as self many times.
I like it.
It's true.
You're an actor, editor, cinephile, director, prop person. You're a producer. You don't do props, but you do a lot of things. And
come on, as producer, you kind of do props.
Yes.
No, you're not a, you know.
But you do all these things, and I wonder, I have heard some people say, don't get lost in the hyphenates.
What are the hyphenates?
Having those multiple
actor, editor,
titles
attached
to you, dragging you down, perhaps. Yeah. Well, you know, I have tons of actor friends who started working in transcription for reality shows. You know, they watch a video of some guy mumbling on, you know, where you have Know What I'm Saying on Shortcut. And next thing you know, they're story editors. Next thing you know, they're in production. And then there goes the acting. So that really depends on what you want to do. If they really, really wanted to be an actor, they would have, but they didn't. And So, you know, because it's a lot of work. It's much easier to just listen to what a bunch of numbskulls are saying. And so I think a lot of people slip into production just because of that. And then they'll still go actor and a producer when, like, they haven't tried to act in a long time because it takes work. I think you have to manage that wisely. Again, I was just saying off the air, it's just kind of douchey to be introduced as all these hundreds of things. It's like, oh, okay, do you have to be 90 different titles in the entertainment industry? No, you don't. You could just say, yeah, I'm a writer, performer.
It's interesting, though, because I am an actress first. I say that first. And I'm a producer. And I became a producer out of necessity of wanting better roles for myself. Mm-hmm. I could have stayed just acting and just going out for that, and I would have been continually raped and shot in the head and put stupid words in my mouth, because that's what was happening before I started producing. But I still have people saying, well, but what are you? Are you an actor or are you a producer? And I don't understand why there is this disconnect of not being able to be both.
Well, yeah. I created my production company first to make money. I wanted to shoot and edit events, not like kids' parties, thank God. But I thrive on doing things like movie premieres and concerts and appearances and things like that. And then it just so happened I had all this equipment. So that's why I started making the shorts. So for me, yeah, I'll say I'm a producer and an editor and an actor. But, you know, yeah, if you have too many, again, I think the main thing is if you have too many of them, it's just douchey. And I'll stand by that word. You know, it's like, okay, you do 100 things. Calm down.
Yeah,
relax.
Yeah.
We get it.
You're talented.
You're creative. You know, what do you want me to do? But so I'm saying out of necessity. I just didn't want to work at a bank. So now I have this production company and I do that. And then on the side, short film, podcast, you know, these other little projects pop up. So it's a
keeps you fulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
So you know a ton about movies and how movies are made and when they're released and how much they cost and all that stuff. What got you interested in the first place about the behind-the-scenes stuff?
Well, you know, I think for as long as since I was in third grade,
I was in a
play called Tommy's Adventure. Tommy buried his school books and had to be told by the farm animals and the sun and various things like that, that it was a bad idea. So he learned a lesson. And I, from them, was like, this acting is really interesting. I like telling a story and not having to just, like, tell the story, but act it out and have fun with it.
Yeah.
Well, then soon after I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, my favorite film of all time. And I said, how do you make that specifically? And I think I just wanted to be like, I'm so jealous of those guys who made the full shot-by-shot Raiders remake. Have you heard of this?
Is this the same thing,
yes,
same company that did
the
shot-by-shot RoboCop?
That.
No. These were kids that were about my age. They were however old then. They were probably 8 or 9, whatever. And they set out to make Raiders of the Lost Ark shot-by-shot. And they kept aging. Because it took them like 15 years. So by the time they're done, they're like, guys, you know, but they're still doing the same.
Did they shoot it chronologically?
Yeah.
Oh, and so that's so normal. Goes
along, and I have never seen this, and I've always wanted to see it. And I wish I was those guys. Like, I wish I could be telling you their story. That's pretty
if
cool.
You hear, if you're a part of that and you're listening, reach out.
Right? They played at the Newport Beach Film Festival a few years ago. They finished it, you know, they wanted to show it to people.
That's awesome.
And apparently there's one scene they didn't shoot, and now they're going to go back and they're like 30-something. They're going to shoot this one scene in the middle with the plane fight because they couldn't get a plane.
Oh.
Anyway. I had that same passion. I just didn't have the means or didn't think I had the means. You know, so forever I've wanted to dig behind the scenes and see how those guys
I love that you just said you didn't think you had the means. Why do you think you have the means now?
Well, I have a whole different mindset than when I was a kid and living. Where are you guys from?
Chicago. Alabama.
And Chicago. Okay, so growing up in Chicago, you probably went, I think I could do a lot of things with my life. Growing up in Alabama, you probably went, I'm going to have to really fight to do some things with my life. Upstate New York was kind of the same way. Mm. Not that anyone really pressured me from above, like pushing me down to say, don't do this or that. But there's a lot of complacency, a lot of, you know, let's just have kids and work for 30 years and retire. I mean, okay, that's great for some people, but not for me. I was in the wrong place. So I kind of couldn't get a lot done until I got out of there. I went to college and the whole deal. And now, as an adult, I don't see anything stopping me. Even if it takes a while to do things.
And even the studio films seem to take a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of, also back then, you know, I need $3,000 worth of film stock. You know, and then as I grow older and I become 30 or whatever, then it's, hey, here's a tape. You make it look like film and the tape is $2.99. Now there isn't even any tape. So everything's just gotten, of course, more and more accessible as well.
Yeah. So. Speaking of which, we were at Photochem this morning, which is the last film lab that there is, where they're actually making film.
Oh, yes.
And I think that one of the things that people who are listening, whether they're professionals or consumers of film, are having a hard time understanding, there's the studio model that was the old model where you needed millions of dollars of OPM, which, as you mentioned...
Other people's money.
in order to start doing this, and you need a whole bunch of talent, and you need people who are dedicated writers and editors and all this stuff. And now you can buy a laptop computer and put some software onto it and shoot your own movie on a relatively good prosumer camera, and you could make a feature film. However, the number of people who actually end up doing it and accomplishing what they want, I think that a lot of people talk about it and then, you know, taking that step and really doing it are two totally different things. And living in LA, what do you see as the main difference between those two states of mind?
Well, Corbett introduced me as the original movie guy because I run a website called themovieguys.net. Now, if you go there, you'll see a lot of reviews and print and stuff like that. But if you listen to our podcast, it's basically a comedy show. We call it The Showcast, and we goof on a lot of movies. But mainly, I would say, outside of just goofing in a comedy show, that any movie that's done is a great movie because you've already beaten 80% of the crowd just by finishing it. I am in that group that has been beaten. So I set out to not be beaten anymore. You know, it's my, wait, all these people, that guy made a movie? What? You know, so I feel like that's motivation, if nothing else, than my, you know, outside of my own personal desire to go out and get a film done.
You've made shorts.
I've made shorts.
You make a regular video podcast. I mean, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, we do put up a 90-minute video.
That's every week.
Longest, every week.
And how many do you have now? What episode number are you on?
100 and...
Well, the showcast that we shoot at the Admirals Club in Burbank is 42 episodes old, but we were shooting, you know, two-minute movie previews and things like that since 2009. So, yeah, it's like 150-plus episodes.
Wow.
Plus some radio shows in the mix there as well that are just all audio.
But then you stepped it up to the Admiral's Club, and now you've got a new product. New cleaning lady, new everything.
The Admiral's Club, the strip club in Chicago where we're from.
Mm.
Not
you know
that different.
No,
explain.
And go slowly.
Girls.
That's pretty much all you need to know.
Okay. That was the place right around from where we used to live in Hollywood. But anyway, the question was, what was the question?
The question is, what is it about producing specifically, which I think that a lot of people don't get what a producer actually does. And maybe Grace can chime in on this too. But being somebody who watches film production happen, I am very aware that a movie set is very different than what most people think it is or think it should be And, you know, that's just something that I think can be clearer for people. So in your mind, what is it that you need? What are the ingredients in order to actually make your movie? Aside from OPM.
Right. Not opium. OPM.
Well.
Acronym. Other people's money.
It's a whole different kind of movie.
Yes. Well, you know, I would actually want to put that question to you, Grace. I mean, sure. I know it's I'm the guest and all, but from a distance, Rob Reiner once said when he was when A Few Good Men got 7 Oscar nominations, but not Best Director, he said, you know, I don't know how that happens. I mean, this was hot off the year that Bruce Beresford wasn't even nominated for Driving Miss Daisy, which won Best Picture. Same thing happened with Argo. And Rob Reiner said, when the film wins Best Picture, you give an Oscar to the director, you give an Oscar to the producers. And there you go. That's the Oscars going to the right hands for people who shape this movie into what it is.
Right.
So, but a lot of times when I see a movie, I know that this movie is produced by John Hughes. Now, wait a minute. Is it directed by John Hughes? Because if it's directed by John Hughes, I'm getting real excited. If it's produced, So how is it that a producer can't get... This is still a mystery to me. I'm admitting, sadly not answering your question, but saying I'm still a bit mystified as to why sometimes when a movie is produced by someone I really enjoy, it doesn't have the quality as when they direct it. When their vision gets the script, right, and guides it through to completion.
What's a producer, Grace?
My definition of a producer is, frankly, they are that one person who is there from the beginning and makes it go all the way to the end. They push it through development, they push it into production, and then when everybody, like, after production, I feel like 95% of the people who worked on the film are like, see you later, let us know how it goes. And the producer is the person who keeps it going. They're going to make the movie. And that's why I think the director and the producers get handed the Oscar. Because really, at the end of the day, like, yeah, the director helped write the story and bring the vision to it. And I also come to this as a creative producer. So not just an executive producer who's just bringing the money, not just a producer who is just doing the spreadsheets and getting the shit done. I just made our podcast R-rated.
PG-13. You get one F-bomb, too, and you're still
PG-13. Yeah, probably for
in case you're really heated about that word,
yeah. But a creative producer from, you know, my dreams, and I'm learning more and more about this, and hopefully we'll, you know, study under some really great creative producers out there. But they also bring their vision to the project. And that's one thing that I've really been bringing to my projects. And I think it's probably also the actor in me that, like, wants to create the story and see it through. And I think because I'm not the writer and because I'm not the director, I can sometimes take bolder choices with, especially in the producer position too, because the producer position has that kind of, you know, bizarrely elevated power status from driving from the beginning all the way to the end.
So in that case, though, that the producer is the most powerful person. But like Paul said, sometimes you'll see an executive producer, you know, executive produced by some person that you really respect, and it's not. What's the difference between an executive producer and a producer?
Well, an executive producer is really bringing the money. They're bringing, sometimes they're bringing companies in who are going to do the work for free or at that executive producer's rate, which can also be a really huge gift to a film. Sometimes an executive producer is just bringing the lead talent, you know? So that's why you sometimes see, like, 6 executive producers. Sometimes, in I think indie films especially, they just hand out executive producer credits, you know, to the person who gave all the locations or whatever.
So, but Paul's comment earlier, and you said that there's sometimes you'll see something and it'll have somebody's name in it that you really love.
Yeah.
And you happen to know that that person does really good work. And you love movies. Mm-hmm. So, clearly. What is it that surprises you most about a movie that has all the right ingredients of people that you respect, it has money behind it, and it's got a topic that you're excited about? I know that, you know, I've seen your show, and you'll mention a movie that no one has heard is coming out, you know, or that nobody actually goes to see. Yeah. What surprises you about, you know, the ingredients not equaling an actually successful movie?
I think that question answers itself, you know? Like, if you see George Clooney, love to find a failure of his bastard. But but if his name's attached to something that you find of less quality, you're like, wow, what went wrong in there? How come nothing between... Well, I just saw Monuments Men. Not a great film.
Mm.
You know, and so how did that not be a great film? With that, you know, male camaraderie, check, Ocean's 11, you know, Prestige Project, check, Syriana, Argo, whatever, these things that Clooney's involved in are all things from the past. So I don't know what happens between... I don't know the answer. It's an intangible, I think.
And you have access to the data, though, too. I mean, you know how much they cost and when they're being released and...
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I kind of follow budgets. Not a whole lot, though. But, like, Draft Day, this new Ivan Reitman film with Kevin Costner that's coming out. I just saw an advanced screening of it. And there's huge, gaping script flaws in it.
Mm.
And then my friend Kevin and I sat at the end of it, just watched the credits go by. He's like, that guy didn't say anything. That guy didn't say anything about the huge...
Well,
that guy, I mean, granted, makeup people aren't even reading it. They just show up. They're not reading the script. But how does it get past all those people, this huge thing? It's like...
You got to wonder, though, if it really is getting past them or if their plates are so full that they're just like, F-bomb. And let it happen.
That was our one F-bomb.
That was our F-bomb.
No, you still could really lay
really
one out.
Really lay one out.
Two and your King's Speech, you know? Like, if they said the F once, BG, but they said it 10 times, whatever, that's R.
But yeah, you know, I mean, with George Clooney executive producing things, I think he's, you know, it's his pet projects, I think, typically. When you see a big actor executive
producing
something.
Yeah, that's a bad example, because I just wrote a whole article about on the website about how Clooney and Pitt and Damon, even when they fail, just always find themselves in great projects. So that may be a bad example, because damn that Clooney. I mean, awards too? Really? Women, money, looks? Mm. Needs awards
too?
Well,
handsome.
And, you know, I mean...
The ladies beg to differ.
Many ladies is okay, but maybe he's missing that one special lady.
Would you like to tell him to the microphone?
Oh, stop. She's very taken by the show's host at this point.
Yeah. Anyway. I think it is interesting to see when somebody you really respect has executive produced or direct or edited or something like that, and then it definitely has those gaping holes.
Yeah.
You wonder if it's the distributors?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I have no
answer
to that.
Are they pushing it? Like, they got to get it done because they need this release date for this awards? Because you always hear about films getting pushed back, like Gatsby, right? Open like a whole year later, right?
Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And now the sequel got pushed.
I mean, all that stuff happens. So you got to wonder if it happens on the reverse, too. And they're like, we can't wait, so we're going to push this through. And it doesn't get the time that it needs to be massaged and nurtured and pickups shot. Sometimes I imagine that the money's not there to do pickups, and whatever companies are involved are probably on to the next project.
So these are the questions that we're going to be answering on this show.
Yeah, sadly, you can't answer them right out of the gate. And, you know, let any big Hollywood names listening to this know that when you attach your name, see that project through to the end. Like, I've heard about directors finishing their direction on the set, the movie goes to post, and like you said, even the director's like, whoop, I'm on my next movie.
Yeah.
See that thing through to the end and make sure you've got a good film by the time you're done, because we go out for those names. We plunk down the money for those names, and we have no answer now, but maybe if you keep cranking out good stuff, we won't have to ask the question anymore.
There's the formula for the answer.
Paul, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Paul Preston is the host of Movie Guys, which you can find at themovieguys.net. He is all of the things that you've heard about. You've been listening to The Producer's Patio from Sterling Rock Productions in Chicago. I'm Corbin Lunsford here with Grace McPhillips. Tune in next time.